This is your host, Jason Snurgrove, and I will be your guide as we journey down the road to pleasure hunt or hitting the long trail to those great cob hunts. This is the Coonhound Collective Podcast. Welcome to the Coonhound Collective Podcast again tonight. We have a pretty good show for you that lined up.
We got a good show for you.
Here we go.
You hear me in there, Judge?
Yeah, I got you.
You just treat me right there.
I got you treed right there.
Okay.
Still not sure I can see you with that light you got, but I got you. All right. You want to read some Apple reviews? We had several come in since we've read the last ones. I think we got five.
Get into this show.
Well, you got to hold on. We got to do these Apple reviews first.
We got a good one coming up here.
I know.
I've been excited about this.
I know. It's going to be a good one.
All right. Read your... But pineapple reviews.
Yeah, let's read these first. All right. Let's see.
I'll be over here drinking my Got Your Six coffee while you read them reviews.
Okay, we got 5 new reviews.
That's good.
Yeah. We appreciate everybody that went on there and left us 5 stars and dropped us a few lines. Looks like the Coon Hunting Snack podcast was a big hit. We had several reviews about that. I've had quite a few text messages and messages on Facebook about it too. So even some pictures, some people sent me some pictures of their snacks. So thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like my snacks.
So we may have to go round robin and do snacks one more time. I got some other guys that probably know for real about some snacks, just judging by their body shape.
Huh.
They probably know about them snacks. So we may have to go again on snacks. Do some more call-ins. So, hey, if you want to talk about some snacks, shoot me a message on Facebook. Send me an email. We might set up some phone call-ins and do that again. All right. So, first up, 5 stars. Kentucky Coon Hunter 22. Glad to see the podcast back up and running. Keep them coming. Thanks, buddy. We're going to try to keep them going.
Yeah, I got him off the couch.
Yeah. No more Facebook hunting. Next one, great podcast, 5 stars. I guess this is Virginia Coon Hunter. Great podcast. I've listened to all of them. Glad you're back doing new work. Hey, we appreciate it. We're gonna try to keep some different stuff coming. Next one, glad to hear it. BNSF 421. I'm glad to finally see some podcasts coming out. Done a great job with the new co-host. Oh, look at there with a new co-host.
They're bragging on me already.
Already bragging on you.
All right. I like it.
All right.
Everybody's got to get a little pat on the back every once in a while.
Hey, we got to move on from
motivation.
That.
Motivation.
He's got headphones on. He's going to break them. His head's swelling over there.
Yeah, you're going to have to get me a bigger size.
All right. Next one, snacks. 5 stars from... Man, I don't know. It's WARRSWAR is the little tag. Blue Diamond Smokehouse Almonds. You know, I like almonds.
Me too.
I could eat them about like pistachios.
Them Blue Diamond, they're good.
They are good. Tina had some. I think they were like blueberry covered or something.
I've had them. I was just sitting there thinking about them. When you said the blueberry, I was picturing that package.
Oh, man. They are.
There was some kind of like blueberry powdered stuff flavored over them.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to make a list. We have to get us some bird just
what
flew
you in
my
gutter. There?
Bird flew in my gutter.
Oh.
We had to get us a list here of snacks going. All right. Last one. 5 stars. Cotton Creek Coon Dogs. Glad you're back. Enjoying the show. Best snacks are jerky and peanut M&Ms.
Hey, I like peanut M&Ms.
Ma'am, when you said you dumped those out when we were feeding something over there.
Oh, don't.
Yeah, I ain't going to say what we were feeding.
Just quit while you're ahead.
Hey, I wanted to come over there where you was feeding and pick them up.
I got a deal on them.
Man.
Yeah.
I like some peanut M&Ms.
Oh, me too.
I don't need them, but I like them.
Oh, I love them.
So I think we need to do, maybe do it. Go back around, make some more call-ins, and
yeah, I know a few people we can call.
Do another snack.
Mm-hmm. We got some other call-ins we're going to do too.
Yeah,
we got some other ideas.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
Yeah,
some serious stuff too, but
yeah. But the snacks, I think.
I want to get good. A bunch of people involved.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I liked it. Yeah. I like it. I like the call-in stuff.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think what we got tonight would be good. Be interesting, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you just stand by and we'll get our guest on here momentarily.
Hello.
Hey, Mr. Lee.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
Just great. How are y'all?
Oh, can't complain. Doing pretty good.
Good deal.
You had a long day?
Yeah, I've had a long week. I'm working at a nuclear plant right now. We had a emergency shutdown, so we've been working a lot of hours trying to get a nuclear unit back up.
Oh, man. Yeah, you have been busy. Well, I'll give you some good news. War Eagle.
Our old dad.
Oh, boy. We're fixing to talk coon dogs here, not football.
Okay. I said, whatever you say. Because you don't know nothing about football.
No.
No, he don't.
That's a waste of time. I don't know nothing about coon hunting either.
Yeah.
We'll try to get going here so we don't hold you up too long. That way you can get this recorded and get you something to eat and get ready to start again tomorrow.
That sounds good. My wife's already
got. All right. Well, Mr. Lee, won't you go ahead and introduce yourself to us? Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from.
Yeah, my name is Lee Patton. I live in Lexington, Alabama, which is in the northwest corner of the great state of Alabama. And I'm 52 years old, and I've been coon hunting my whole life. My uncle actually got me started hunting with him and my cousins when I was about six years old. It's just one of them things, y'all know, it just gets in your blood. You can't never get it out. So,
yes, sir. What kind of dogs did you start with?
Well, just whatever with Rick Coon when I started. And my uncle had an old English dog, actually a good-looking tri-color English dog. Don't ask me how he's bred because I don't know back then, but that was back in the late 70s. So we just hunted whatever we could find at Trey Coon, and he trapped a lot of coons and caught a lot of coons and sold a lot of coons hides, and he used me and my cousins to actually he'd climb a tree and shake coons out, and we'd have to catch them, you know, and that's kind of how I grew up.
So, I already know you have English dogs now, but is that what got you sticking with the English dogs, or did you veer off to something else?
Yeah, no, not really. I'm gonna laugh at me, but my first dog was he was a crossbred dog. He's a mixed up dog more than he was a crossbred dog. He was half English, and his mama was half red bone and half black and tan. But he looked like a red bone with one white foot and a white chest.
He was a three way cross.
Yeah. That's when I think I got him when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and he was my first, and I went through a lot of them after that, and I really didn't start hunting English dogs till about 25 years ago. I guess 25 years ago, I've hunted a little bit of everything.
What was your first registered dog?
My very first registered dog was a little Walker female out of Hickory Nut Harry, and I had about the same time as that, I had a red bone direct off of Hunter's Famous Amos. Probably my first two registered dogs that I remember.
Was you competition hunting those dogs, or you just hunting?
That's just when I was young and in high school, you know, up into high schools when I was probably around 15, 16, whenever I got those two. And that's the first two registered dogs I can remember hunting myself.
So when did you kind of move over into some competition hunting?
I started competition hunting a little bit when I was 16, 17, somewhere running there. And I was actually hunting a little blue tick female, American blue tick female at that time. I did quite a bit of winning with, and I hunted blue ticks for probably almost 10 years, I guess, something like that. And had some nice ones, but when I finally got a good English dog, I ain't looked back.
Yeah, that's what Brett, he tried a Walker dog one time. But
I did.
Yeah, I seen a picture of you holding a Walker dog on a bench.
I'd like to see that picture.
What are you talking about?
I seen a picture of you. You had a Walker dog up on a bench holding his tail in his head. I think it was a female, matter of fact.
Not on a bench.
On something?
Was it?
Yeah.
I was just in the yard.
Maybe. I don't know.
I feel like to see that picture.
Somebody was setting me up. I don't know what they were doing. I think I might have been just over there talking to somebody, petting it, being nice, and they snapped a picture of me.
No. I've heard the story. He actually hunted it, I think, in a night hunt.
Oh. You got me. I did. I forgot. Let's not talk about me no more. Let's get back on Lee here.
We all make mistakes, Brett. We all do.
So, what was the first dog that you really started doing some winning with competition hunting?
I had as far as English dogs go, and what really turned me on to English dogs is I had a young male dog direct off of Woodstock Grizzly probably 22 years ago. And I don't even remember what his bottom side was, but he was about as a complete dog as you'd ever ask for. And he was a really good competition dog because he was like what everybody wants these days. He opened his mouth quick and he kept it open, and he was about as quick as anything I ever seen. And I done some winning with him, and he's the one that really got me going. And he ended up, I turned down a lot of money for that dog. Like I said, we all make mistakes, and I wish you go back in time. I wish I'd have sold him, but I didn't. And 2 weeks later, I was hunting him. He got run over and killed. So, and then it took me a little while to find something else I liked. I went through a lot of dogs before I found something else.
Did you try to find something that was in that Woodstock Grizzly line, or did you just move on to something different completely after that?
I did. I didn't quit hunting, but I kind of, my kids were young and we were playing ball and I was coaching ball and we were doing all that fun stuff. So I really wasn't hunting as much and really wasn't competition a whole lot after him. And I kind of got out of the dog, and, them boys of mine, they were young. They wanted to start hunting some more. So I was just looking for a good, solid old dog that would tree a coon, you know, to tree some coons that we could hunt with. And good buddy of mine lives over here close to me, Hunter Jones. They had a English dog. Well, at the time, I really didn't know his English dog and really didn't care. I just was looking for something to tree coons. And he said, yeah, we got a dog over here. He's 6 years old. He's a Grand Night dog. He's PKC champion. But we're not hunting him anymore. He said, if you want to come get him, come get him. So I went over there and got him and started hunting him, just hunting with these boys. And that was a coon, tree and saw a gun. He's a coon dog. And I finally got kind of curious and asked Hunter what he was out of. He said, I don't know. He said, come get his papers. You want to come get him. You can have him. And I went over and got him. And the dog's name is he's a Grand Night PKC champion, Bat Rose Royd Rage. And Rage is directly off of Main Street Roy and the T2 Blue Swamp Diamond female. So he was a full litter mate brother to Main Street Dino's daddy, the Hollaback Blade dog. They had only bred him one time to that American Wild Dog female. I started trying to put every good female I could find, you know, with him, and that's where my little Shatter female I got now come from, and I've raised a ton of puppies off her. That's what Dixie's mama's off of Rage.
About what year was this?
This was probably, Rage is buried at the Coon Dog Cemetery, and he died in 2000 and, I don't know, 17, somewhere around there, 16, 17, and he was about 12 years old when he died. So it was about, I don't know, 17 years ago, something like that, maybe.
How long did you have Rage for?
About 4 or 5 years. And like my little Shatter female, she's almost 10, so that kind of tell you how old. That was, and which all of my nicer dogs are getting old like me. I've got several of them that's already 9 and 10 years old, and y'all know how that they get old quick.
Oh yeah,
hard to believe they're that old. But most of my stuff here goes back to Rage or that line of breeding.
Yeah. So after Rage, what did you start hunting after that?
Well, that's about the time I went to Autumn Oaks and met Mr. Tim and Kyle Rhodes up there, and they had a litter of puppies off of Main Street Dino, and their Tri-County Ada female that was off of Charlie 7. And I bought a puppy from him at Autumn Oaks 9 years ago. And that was my blood dog that I have now that I breed, raise puppies off of. So he was the next in line. And then I've got several puppies off of him here, females that's 5, 6 years old, and then some young dogs. And then I run across my ground dog. I got him from Mr. Kyle Shelton in Scottsboro, Alabama. I just happened to be driving through there one day and stopped to visit him, and he had an 18-month-old, good-looking, red-tick English dog that I couldn't take my eyes off of, and I asked him what he'd take for him. He priced him, I sold him, brought him home, and he turned into a real nice dog, and I've raised several litters off of him. But he's just a, him and Blood are just two different type dogs. Ground's a track dog. He's old Wilcox bred dog. He's a grandpup to Top Gun, and he's got a little bit of everything in him. He's got some Main Street in him, and he's got some Briar Creek in him on the bottom side. He's got a little bit of everything in him. But he's an old timey type coon dog that I kind of grew up hunting with. He's get his mouth open, ball mouth, track dog, cold nose. Ain't just super fast, but you'll act, you know, you'll beat the tree sometime, but you better not miss.
You're talking about ground, right?
That's right.
Yeah. He's a good looking rascal, I know that.
Yeah, he's getting old too. He's fixed to be 9 years old. So.
Really? Wow. How old's, let's back up and go to Blood. Let's talk about him. How old's he now?
He's 9.
He's 9.
He just turned 9. He turned 9 years old yesterday.
Lee, you bred quite a few females to him. How many pups he got on the ground? He's got quite a few, don't he?
He's got about 160, 170. I don't remember exactly the last count. And I've got a female I just bred to him last week. Matter of fact, I made the second cross, that Ace dog that I'm hunting now. I made that cross again. I'm betting back to Ace and Sandy's mama. That's in Oklahoma, little Sandy female. She just made night champion this last weekend. So that litter's doing real good. That's a pretty good cross, I think. So we made that cross again this week, last week.
They're out of him, and what female was it?
It's a little Lily female. She's bred a lot like Blood. She's Main Street top and Charlie 7 bottom, hard time horse.
Mm-hmm. That's right up your alley, Jason.
Yeah.
He's sitting over here grinning real big.
That's what I like. I like the Main Street and Charlie 7 crosses. That works really good. That works really good for around here, you know, the type of hunt.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
What's a Blood, does he tell us about his mouth and how he operates?
Well, I was doing a lot of winning with Blood when he was young, and we got him qualified to World Hunt a couple of times. And I started having to travel with work and stuff, so I got to where I wasn't competition a whole lot. I didn't travel a whole lot, but at that time, people started wanting to breed to him just because of mostly his he's more of a you know, he's a get gone. If he ain't under coon in about 5 minutes, you better start driving. You know, that kind of, he's got a lot of drive, big locate, huge mouth. You know, he ain't gonna out hunt his mouth. I've treated him on hunts when he's 1.2, 1.4 miles, you know, on his locate. You know, he's got that kind of mouth. And that's when people started wanting to breed to him. So I started breeding females to him, and he just got to where I was breeding him when I was hunting him. You know, that kind of thing. But he puts a lot of early starting, hard going. And it's kind of a mixture of, you know, a lot of his pups open a lot on track. A lot of them are tied on track. It's kind of a mixture of it, depending on what's your life, I guess. But like the little Sandy female out of this last cross, she's a open on track, you know, just plenty of mouth on track. accurate, probably one of the most accurate 2-year-olds you ever go to the woods with. And her brother's kind of the opposite. He don't say a whole lot. You know, he's more of an ambush type dog. He's a lot of layups. You know, don't say much on the ground type dog. So it's kind of a mixture too, just depending on what you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after you said blood and ground, what young dogs do you have coming up that you're messing with now? Your dogs out of them or?
I got a young dog in Mississippi getting hunted out. Somebody's dog up there around y'all.
Probably some pot liquor.
Can't remember the guy's name. Brett somebody. Mr. Chuck Henson is handling rat for me. And Rat's out a loner and Chuck Henson's with it female. And he's a super nice young dog. I mean, we got double cast wins with him at the Winter Classic. And he's a big mouth, hard drive, hard going, good track dog, really accurate. You know, he's a really nice 2-year-old. So we got him. Chuck claims he's going to win the Triple Crown with him this year, but we'll see. But he's got a good start, so we'll see how that goes. Got him, and
I've got
my ace dog. Do what?
I said, I hope so. Chuck, he's a big dreamer. He's always got big vision. That's good. He's always real positive.
Rat can perform now. I mean, I wouldn't be scared to turn him loose to nobody, but he's a really nice dog, and I think he's got big things coming. You know, I think Chuck could do some winning with him. And
oh, yeah.
Hopefully get him qualified for the World Hunt. And then I got the little ace dog. We got him qualified for the TLC and went hunting in Rio. Didn't do no good, but he competed well, but he just didn't have no luck. And he's qualified for the got him qualified for the World this year. And probably going to take him to Mississippi and hunt him in the zones in September. And
ace is out of blood, right?
He's out of blood, yeah. And this little lily female lily. I got.
Mm-hmm.
Red back, yeah. And I just purchased half of her from Mr. Ryan Morris, and he lives up towards Jackson, Tennessee, up in that area. She's a coon dog. Now she's a coon trigger. She ain't never been competition hunted, but she's a real nice, about as accurate as dogs I've turned loose. So I think it's a good combination. I think probably Sandy's probably a better combination of the two than what Ace is. Ace is more like blood. You know, Ace has got a big mouth, but he don't have blood's mouth. I mean, he's got blood's. He sounds a little bit like blood, but he don't have blood's volume. He's got blood, but he's got a good hound mouth. And then Sandy's nice. I went up there and hunted with her up in Oklahoma about a month or so ago, and we looked at 11 coons, you know, and I took a dog up there I was trying out that was a pretty nice dog, and Sandy made her look like food. It was bad, yeah.
Really?
So, and I've got let's see, what else? I got a Mr. Ben Bell up in Dayton, Tennessee. He's got a little old 11-month-old. He's probably a year old now. He's a 12-month-old pup out of blood and a pearl female I had. And Pearl's off of Hard Time Crow and that Coon Valley Wild Skeeter female. And we made that cross twice. Hoss has been trained coon since he was 6 months old.
How old now again?
He's about 12. He's about 12 months old.
12 months old?
He's been trained for about 6 months, yeah. And he's a little blue tick female. I mean, blue tick male. And he started training coons when he was 5.5, 6 months old. He's doing really good, Ben Bell. He runs that club up there at Dayton, Tennessee. He's hunting him. Me and him are kind of partners in him. And we just made that cross again. And I've got a puppy. Probably sent you pictures of that little blue puppy that Courtney was showing around at Dayton, Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And everybody was stopped trying to buy him. He's out of that same cross. He's a good-looking little pup. And he's about, he's probably 10 weeks old now, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's dandy.
Yeah, nice.
You brought him back with you. You didn't let him get away from you.
No, but I had to go hide him. There's people at St. Jude really liking him.
I bet.
Go hide him, and they'd had to fight Courtney for him, I think. Well, so, and I was trying to think of what else I got out here. I got about 11 dogs. I don't know where all of them are. Keith Partain, he lives about an hour and a half south of me, around Gunnersville, Alabama. He's got a really nice female out of Blood and Shatter. We call her Beauty. She'd be a litter mate to the Dixie female that I'm probably gonna come breed back to London. And she's a real nice dog. And me and him are partners on her. And
You said she's a litter mate to Dixie?
Yeah, she's a little black and white female. She's one of the ones. She only likes a couple wins having a title, and Dixie only likes a couple wins having a title. There's several of them out there that I got to get changed out. And Dixie, she got a cast win to win a classic this year. So,
Yep.
I think she likes two wins being titled, and I'm not going to do that.
Well, Dixie's got a big old mouth on her.
Yeah, she does. She's got her daddy's mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, I like her mouth.
And I was trying to figure out what else I got out here. Oh, I just did I got a dog that's supposed to be here at midnight tonight. Mr. Randy Hester's supposed to be delivering me a dog at midnight tonight that's out of some of that same stuff that he's talking about, that hockey eater in Missouri.
I don't guess I knew about this one.
Yeah, there's going to be a female. I just did some dealings and got a litter mate sister to rat, and had a loner with it. She's supposed to be here. Randy Hester's supposed to be bringing her here. He said he'd be here about midnight tonight.
Oh, really?
There, yeah. So there's probably going to be some Main Street Blood and some loner crosses in the future if he lives long enough.
Well, that'll be interesting. I don't think I've bred. I don't want to say now. I kind of lose track, forget. I don't think I've bred very many Main Street females.
You try to think back about all the females you've crossed on and stuff, and it's hard to remember all of them. I've had a ton.
Yeah.
It'll be hard to keep up with all of them.
So, Mr. Lee, before we move off those dogs there or into a different area here, what kind of hunting terrain do you have right there where you're at? Is it hilly, swampy, flat?
Well, we got a little bit of everything. I mean, we've got mostly hills and hollers is what I hunt. We've got some Tennessee River bottoms. I live on Blue Water Creek, and it's a lot of bluffs and pretty rough terrain around here right where I hunt at. But I've got some pretty decent hunting around some cow pastures and farms and, you know, some pretty open flat stuff. And then it's a little bit of everything. You know, we've got a few swampy places around here, but it's mostly if you're going to get in water right here, it's going to be in a river bottom somewhere. But it's a good combination of a lot of different stuff. I've got some places, like I've seen y'all show videos and stuff and climbing in bluffs and stuff. I got places like that, like right here behind my house. There's an 80-foot bluff going straight down to Blue Water Creek, and we tree on the side of it all the time. But I'm getting too old to be doing that. I try to stay in them easy hunting spots if I can.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I travel north, try to get out of some of this that I'm in, but yeah. I have to go an hour or so north to be able to get out of it.
Yeah, I go to Mississippi. I got some friends of mine live in Golden, Mississippi, which is just right across the state line from Alabama to Mississippi, where I'm at. And it's probably about an hour, 15-minute drive. Mr. Toby Kinder, he's actually hunting a ground dog for me now. He's got ground at his house. I go down there and hunt on the Tennessee Tom Bigby Waterway with him. I got some really good hunting in river bottoms down there. I try to visit them as much as I can because they got a lot better hunting than what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know Chuck's got a lot better hunting than what we got up here.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I don't guess I really knew what we were going to talk about next until Brett brought it to my attention. We've kind of been talking on phone and through Brett texting us in a crazy group chat and stuff like that for a year or so. And I don't guess I knew this, but you were talking about some dogs that were getting older and you have something to do with dogs after they pass on. You take care of the Coon Dog Cemetery. Is that right?
Sadie was an old stone statue standing tall. In the middle of a graveyard, down an old road that we walked. The boys would gather there at night and say, "You're not a man if you didn't walk across that yard and shake old Sadie's hand."
Established in 1937 in a small grassy meadow deep in the rich, thick wilderness of Freedom Hills, Key Underwood sadly buried his faithful coon dog, Troop. They had hunted together for more than 15 years. They had been close friends. The burial spot was a popular hunting camp where coon hunters from miles around gathered to plot their hunting strategies, tell tall tales, chew tobacco, and compare coon hounds. Those comparisons usually began and ended with Troop. He was the best around. Underwood knew there was no place in the world Troop loved more than that camp. It was only fitting, he decided, that Troop spend eternity there. On that dreary Labor Day in 1937, Underwood said goodbye to his legendary coonhound. He wrapped Troop in a cotton pick sack, buried him 3 feet down, and marked the grave with a rock from a nearby old chimney. On the rock, with a hammer and a screwdriver, he had chiseled out Troop's name and the date. A special marker was erected in his memory. Troop, who was half red bone coonhound, half bird dog, was known throughout the region as the best. He was cold nosed, meaning he could follow cold coon tracks until they grew fresh, and he never left the trail until he had the coon treed. Out of one hunter's devotion to his faithful coonhound was born the Key Underwood Coondog Memorial Graveyard, which has become a popular tourist attraction and is the only cemetery of its kind in the world. Other hunters started doing the same thing when their favorite coondogs died. Today, more than 185 coondogs from across the United States are buried in this spot in Northwest Alabama. When I buried Troop, I had no intentions of establishing a coon dog cemetery, says Underwood. I merely wanted to do something special for a special coon dog. When the columnist Retta Grimsley Johnson interviewed Underwood in 1985, he told her that a woman from California wrote him wanting to know why he didn't allow other kinds of dogs to be buried at the coon dog cemetery. "You must not know much about coon hunters and their dogs if you think we would contaminate this burial place with poodles and lap dogs," he responded. Some of the burial ground's headstones are crafted of wood, some of sheet metal. Others are not unlike the stones found in a normal cemetery. But of course, the names of the deceased are different, and so are the epitaphs. For example, listed among the dead are Patches, Preacher, Smokey, Bean Blossom Bottom, Night Ranger, and etched along with these names are tributes such as "A Joy to Hunt With," "He wasn't the best, but he was the best I ever had." Hunters Famous Amos, a hound that was Ralston's Purina Dog of the Year in 1984, is buried here, as well as several world champion coon dogs. To qualify for burial in this unique cemetery, where more than 185 coon dogs have been laid to rest, it has been said that three requirements must be met. The owner must claim their pet to be authentic coon dog. A witness must declare the deceased is a coon dog. And a member of the Key Underwood Coon Dog Memorial Graveyard Incorporated must be allowed to view the coon dog and declare it as such. "We have stipulations on this thing," said the late O'Neill Bolton, former caretaker of the coon dog graveyard. "A dog can't run no deer, possum, nothing like that. He's got to be a straight coon dog, and he's got to be full hound. Couldn't be mixed up bred or a house dog."
Yeah, I'm one of the board members. There's four of us that are board members for the Coon Dog Cemetery in Cherokee, Alabama, and so I help upkeep. We raise money to for the upkeep of the cemetery, and And I've got a few dogs buried there. And my cousin Frankie, we grew up hunting together and stuff. He's a couple of years older than me, but he's got three or four dogs buried there. So we've been doing that for, he's been on the board for probably 20 years. I've been on the board for about the last 13, 14 years, something like that. And we have a big Labor Day celebration every year, that Monday of Labor Day, which is usually right after Autumn Oaks. And we have a bluegrass gospel singing bands, live music, and we have barbecue, and a bunch of vendors come set up, and we have a good time. And like I say, all that money we raise goes towards Upton Cemetery.
You know, I was reading on the website, and I seen y'all had that festival around Labor Day, and y'all said y'all had a liars contest on there.
Yeah, we need to get Brad up here for that down here.
I was going to say, I can't even bring him down here because it ain't going to be fair. He's going to win every time.
Fair to nobody else, I
don't
understand.
Oh, yeah, boy. I'd raise a pile of money for you.
So we actually have a liars contest and a buck dancing contest, and it's just a good time. Well, I've been going to that thing.
But back up. A what dance?
Buck dancing. You ever been buck dancing?
He has no idea. Can you spell that?
Hey, is that an Alabama deal?
It is. It's about like.
Now, did you say, hey, what Jason's dying. What kind of dancing is it? Spell that. I couldn't hear you, really. It's storming here so bad right now.
Buck dancing, B-U-C-K. Spell out muscadines. Y'all don't have muscadines up there either, so
no.
We got muscadines
and buck dancing. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Hey, I've got muscadines at my place. Brett might not have them, but I've got them right out here on the fence.
They're not native. They're growing. Somebody's planted them out there.
Yeah, he claims y'all didn't have no muscadines up there.
So anyways, well, that throwed me off.
Yeah, so anyway.
So that buck dancing, stomp grapes or what? Do you put grapes on those muscadine grapes on the floor and stomp them and squish them between your toes and dance or what?
No, you just need to YouTube it.
Okay. I'm about halfway.
You ever seen the movie where the red fern grows?
Yeah.
So the night that they have the championship hunt off, and them old guys are playing music and dancing, that's a buck dance.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I ain't quite a Yankee, but I don't guess I know enough about some of that southern stuff. But
there's a spring there at the Coondog Cemetery. They used to make moonshine there too.
Jason's showing me something on YouTube here right now. He's having me watch this. I could master that in 5 minutes or less. I could pull that off.
You could win the buck dancing contest and the liar contest.
Yeah, I'd raise you guys so much money.
Maybe we may have to make the trip down on Labor Day and check it out.
I was gonna say, it's really something. See, we got a little over 350 dogs buried there now. It's kind of hard to keep up with it because there was so many dogs buried back in Key Underwood started the Coondog Cemetery in 1937, and he just buried his favorite dog Troop there just because that was their favorite hunting spot, and that's where all his buddies used to come and they'd camp and they'd hunt. And when Troop died there, he buried him there, and then his buddies started burying their dogs there. And he really didn't intend to start a Coondog Cemetery, but that's kind of where it turned out. And there's people come from all over the country and people come from all over the world. We have a guest book there, and there's people from, you know, overseas comes and signs a guest book. And it's really a neat thing to see because it's the only
that
one like
awesome.
It in the world.
Yeah,
there's another one like it in the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. I got some questions and stuff. I want to get in some details on this because there's probably a lot of listeners out there that might, you know, I'm sure most of the listeners have heard of the Coondog Cemetery down there, but they may not know any details, and they may want to try to bury a dog down there or something one of these days. What's the cost associated with burying a dog there, and can a person purchase that in advance, or how does
they
that
can.
Work?
They can. So the qualifications we have is if a dog is titled in UKC or PKC or any of the registry night hunts, if they're titled with a night champion or grand night champion or PKC champion, silver champion, whatever, then all we need is a copy of that, copy of their certificate.
Mm-hmm.
We ask for a picture of the dog, and then it's $100 burial fee.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I get that information, we put it before the board. We vote on whether the dog meets the criteria of being buried there or not. So if the dog isn't a competition dog and never been hunted, but a coon dog, we have to have 5 signed affidavits from people who have actually hunted with the dog and actually seen the dog, you know, track and tree wild raccoons and not, you know, not be trashy. So
mm-hmm.
we ask for that documentation and then a photograph of the dog. And then it's, again, it's $100 burial fee. So,
okay.
And all that money goes to is for the upkeep of the cemetery. Like I say, we get dogs from all over the country. There's dogs from New York State buried there. There's dogs from Wisconsin. I mean, just about anywhere in the States, you know, people drove to bury their dogs there.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Back to your question. Yeah, if you could send me information on your dog, you know, if they're getting, you know, some age on them, and that's something you'd like to do, and make arrangements to that, we can make those arrangements, you know, beforehand. We've actually done that a few times.
Right. Good. That's a good deal. So the some other questions I had that I've been thinking about today was the location in there. Does the person get to pick the location to bury the dog? Like, is there plots assigned, or do you guys assign them? Or how does that work?
Yeah, we actually assign the plots because
okay.
If you ever go there and you see the way the cemetery is laid out, like you pull in there to the right, that's where all the older graves are, like where troops buried
mm-hmm.
the 30s and 40s. And you just kind of see the generations, you know.
Right.
Most of the older graves are just a rock with, you know, some chiseled on them or sometimes it's just a rock and you really don't know what dog's there. And then you get in the 60s and 70s and the 80s, the tombstones get a little bit more elaborate. And these days it's like, you know, there's a lot of money put into them. So
mm-hmm.
Hatchet River Dottie is buried there and,
mm-hmm.
and her tombstone is like, it's huge. You just have to see it to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So Murray Reagan brought Dottie there a couple of years ago, and we buried her there. And there's a lot of pretty, you know, pretty famous dogs buried there. So
right.
So like I say, if anybody's interested, I would really suggest it, and I'd really suggest if you've never visited it, you make a trip to visit it. It's a really neat place to see. It's located in the hills of Freedom Hills Wildlife Management Area, between Cherokee, Alabama, and Red Bay, Alabama, just off of Highway 247, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's no cell service out there, and you'll think you're lost before you get there. So
mm-hmm.
it's a really neat place to go visit.
Is
the
it
Rage Dog?
Mm-hmm.
The Rage Dog got he's buried there. I've got a puppy off of Rage buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Blood will be buried there. Ground will be buried there. My shatter female, she'll be buried there, and probably sooner than I'd really like to be. But
yeah.
To answer your question, we kind of control where people bury because we don't want anybody just coming out there and digging, you know, and us not knowing about it. And we try to keep all the, you know, the newer graves together.
Right. Yeah. What about as far as digging it and stuff, do you guys provide the digging for the person, or does the person responsible for digging it, does he have to bring his own tools and all that? And
yeah, we leave that up to the individual. Some people, you know, just bring their family, and it's a kind of a family thing, and they bring the picks and shovels and stuff. We do have some requirements about how deep and stuff. And
yeah, that was going to be my next question. If it was real rocky and stuff down there, if I brought old Lori or Loner down there, I was going to wonder if I could get you to pre-dig it for me maybe before I showed up, because I was going to have a long drive and such.
Yeah, we could probably handle that. I've heard of it. I've heard of it. Now, when Murray Reagan came out there, he brought a little bobcat out there, a little skid steer out there, and which they had to have that to set Dottie's stone with. It's huge.
Wow.
It's really neat.
He went all out.
So all y'all that don't know who Dottie is, you know, she's the all-time reproducing English female, probably the all-time reproducing female of any breed.
But, yeah, I think she is.
Yeah.
So there is a depth requirement and stuff like that. Is there like some kind of vault or casket that a person has to put them in? Or
you don't require it. We just require you go at least 3 feet deep just to keep, you know, keep varmints or keep anything from trying to dig it up. But it's that's what some people do, put them in caskets. Some people, you know, some people bring ashes and bury ashes. You know, it's like, just we don't really have a whole lot of regulations on that, and we kind of leave the gravestone grave marker up to, you know, there's everything from a rock to a cross with a dog's name and collar on it to, you know, metal signs that people get local trade schools to make for them, and or like I say, a lot of them are stone rocks with you know, just engraving in them. So
yeah,
we kind of leave that up. And then you got a lot of them are just regular tombstones like you'd see in a human's graveyard.
So. Right. So the headstone, there's nothing as far as the headstone. A guy can or gal can do whatever they want to do if they bury a hound there. I mean, it doesn't matter the size or the material or type or anything.
Yeah, we kind of like to know, you know, kind of an idea what people are going to do, but we don't have a whole lot of restriction on it.
Okay. So if they get real elaborate and have a big one, that's no big deal. I was just thinking about it taking up space and not knowing how much space is there and all that.
Like, you'd have to see Dottie's to appreciate it. It's big.
Yeah. I bet. I was just sitting here thinking about that 3-foot hole. I hope, wouldn't want one to die in August or September. Have to come down there in the middle of summertime and dig a 3-foot hole.
Alabama in August is really rough.
Oh, I bet.
But you just holler. We'd make arrangements.
I appreciate it. I'll bring some snacks. I guarantee it.
Hey, I do have a question. Brett has a list of questions, but I just got one. Being you brought it up, how much room's out there for future burials? I mean, is it big enough that you probably won't ever run out? Is there a time that you probably will run out? That type of thing.
Well, the state of Alabama actually owns the land because it's in the middle of a wildlife management area, Freedom Hills, and so the land it's on is actually owned by the state of Alabama, and there's plenty of room out there. We could probably double and triple what's out there now, so I don't, in the foreseeable future, I don't see us running out of room. But you know, we could always go back and ask the state for a little bit more land, and I'm sure they would provide it.
Actual state of Alabama has been cooperative. I guess I misunderstood. I thought it was like between two state lands. I didn't realize that the state actually owned the land where the graveyard is.
Yeah, the state actually owns the land. And matter of fact, the wildlife biologist just for the wildlife management area there, she is Miss Courtney Conring. She's actually on the board with us. So we have... You know, we've got that relationship with the state, and we are just, you know, our organization, the Friends of the Coondog Cemetery, is actually what we are, and we don't actually own the land. We just oversee it, and we oversee the upkeep of the cemeteries.
That's awesome.
And we control, you know, the burial requirements.
Oh, that's awesome.
I tell you a neat little story real quick, like, because most people have seen the movie Sweet Home Alabama. And you've seen if you've seen the movie Sweet Home Alabama, you see the burial scene where they bury their dog and supposedly buried at the Coondog Cemetery. And he's not really a Coondog, he's like a bloodhound. but they show the Coon Dog Cemetery being behind a wrought iron gate in the middle of town, or right at the edge of town. You know, they walk out there to the cemetery to bury him, and they used one of our old original sign from the cemetery in the movie, and we never got it back. So if you drive by,
that is cool.
If you drive by the cemetery now, see that I painted the new sign that's up in front of the cemetery. So, because they stole ours and we never got it back.
No kidding.
That's true. That's a true story. So if you're ever watching the movie Sweet Home in Alabama, look for that sign.
Huh.
If you're listening and you got that sign, they would appreciate it back.
Yeah, we need to get that back to Mr. Lee. If anybody ever listened to this and you know where that sign's at or got it, we need to get that sign back.
Yeah. Interesting. So, what's that?
I said it's an interesting story.
Yeah, it is.
To get to that cemetery, is there like a, does it have an actual GPS address, or you just got to turn left at the old hay rake machine and right at the, huh?
Yeah, have to turn right at the stump.
Yeah.
But it's a, no, you can. You can actually Google the Coon Dog Cemetery, and we actually have a Facebook page, and you can actually pull up the coordinates, GPS coordinates, and it'll take you right. You can Google Map, and it'll take you to it. It's halfway between Cherokee, Alabama, off of Highway 72, and Red Bay, Alabama. It's actually on the highway. It's actually right off 4 miles off of Highway 247. Between those two towns, and actually the road I drive by when I go to Chuck's,
mm-hmm.
and when I go hunting with my buddy and Toby Kinder and Gold Mississippi, I drive right by it, and it's the road that the wildlife mm-hmm. refuge on is 20 miles long between Highway 72 and Highway 24.
Oh wow, gotcha. So, if somebody, how do they reach out to you? Like, I didn't know you had a Facebook page. I didn't know the cemetery had a Facebook page, but did you pull it up there?
Don't get on Facebook, look up the Friends of the Coon Dog Cemetery. Or, if you need to contact me, you can contact me, and I can give my phone number. If people's listening, you can contact me. My phone number is 256-412-2149. If you have any questions about the cemetery or any interest in maybe burying a dog there, just give me a holler.
Yeah, that's awesome. When I was on it the other day, I saw that you guys got like shirts and hats and stuff available on there. Is that something you guys do just to help raise money for the cemetery and stuff?
Yeah, we do. And if we get requests all the time from all over the country from people who have visited. And like I say, you can either get on our Facebook page or you can reach out to me, and we can tell you what we have available, and we can get you a hat or a t-shirt. Sometimes we have coffee mugs.
Mm-hmm.
Every 10 years we have like a memorial pocket knife that we sell. They do really good. They're like collector's items. So
yeah,
we don't do them every year, but about every 10 years we'll get Case to make us a memorial pocket knife that has Coon Dog Cemetery in whatever year it is that we're celebrating.
That's awesome. When are you guys going to do another one of them? Do you even know yet?
Let's see. This is 24, probably 3 more years from now.
3 more years. How many of those pocket knives? How many of those knives do you guys usually release?
2027 will be 9 years. 2027 will be 9 years since the cemetery was founded. So we'll do a 90-year
mm-hmm.
Celebration with the pocket knives. And stuff.
That's great. That's awesome.
If you're lucky, you can go back on eBay and you can do a search and stuff. I found a couple of the old knives, like back from the 70s and 80s.
No kidding.
Yep.
That somebody offered on there for sale.
And some of them are pretty expensive if you can find one, but they're collector's items.
Well, so. I bet they are. And was it every year they were case knives? Has it always been a case knife?
As far as I know, they've always been case double X's.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
Pretty nice.
How many of those do you guys usually have made on that 10-year anniversary?
We usually, it just depends. Sometimes, like, I think the last ones we had made, we had like, only had like 150 of them made.
Mm-hmm.
So they're pretty, they're not just something you can find every day. I mean, they're pretty rare. So they're collected.
Yeah, for sure. I bet they go fast. If you just get 150, I bet they don't stick around long.
No, we sell them pretty quick. Matter of fact, I think we got a waiting list for some now.
Oh, really? You guys ever auction any off on Facebook? Have you ever thought about auctioning any off on Facebook or anything, trying to raise some money for?
We actually auctioned some off at the Labor Day celebration last year.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So they're really good. You know, we auction off some stuff there, and I dabble in a little painting and stuff too. So I do some paintings, and we'll auction off some of the paintings and some knives and sell raffles for stuff like that. And,
mm-hmm. And
that's another way we make a little bit of money for the upkeep of the cemetery.
That's good. That's good. Tell me if I'm wrong on this, but like the recognition of the cemetery it's gotten over the years, have you guys like, was there like a television or something that done something on you guys on the cemetery?
Yeah, we get that quite often. We, matter of fact, me and Frankie, my cousin, we just got through doing a documentary with the University of Alabama. Mm-hmm. Actually sent some guys over to do some filming, and they actually filmed us at the cemetery, and actually we actually took them on a coon hunt.
They
actually filmed this coon hunt. Yeah, we did that probably 3 weeks ago, maybe something like that. They hadn't put out the documentary yet.
So that is neat.
Yeah, we get that quite often. I have to go to the cemetery, and Frankie goes sometimes to do interviews with different TV and radio and different publications, magazines and stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So it gets quite a bit of recognition, that's for sure.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we get, and it gets recognition from all over the place. We get calls from a lot of different states, and anybody traveling to North Alabama, you know, we get a lot of calls from people who are traveling from California, traveling from the East Coast and West Coast. And, you know, when they're coming through, they'll make plans to stop by and see. And it's open 24/7 to the public. I mean, you can drive through at any time to look. We've got a guest book. We just ask people to sign the guest registry when they stop by, so we kind of know where people are coming from. But it's a pretty big deal.
You got a lot of people probably stopping there that don't have anything to do with the coon dog. They just want to see the coon dog cemetery.
Yeah, and we get a lot of. We get a lot of phone calls. We have to turn down a lot of dogs just because people think just because I have a coon hound and it was born a coon hound and never been in the woods, you know, they think it's, you know, they think they can. We get a lot of those phone calls, and we have to turn a lot of dogs down just because people think just because it's a hound that they can bury it there. But we have some pretty strict regulations about what dogs can be buried there. And they have to be pretty solid coon dogs to be buried there. They can't just bury anything there. So we try to keep it as sacred as we possibly be, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other requirements or anything else a person need to be prepared for or aware of, like if they was going to consider having one of their coon dogs buried there that we haven't talked about? I'm just trying to think if there was anything that maybe we've overlooked or haven't mentioned.
Y'all have asked pretty much all the questions that we get asked. Like when people are trying to decide if they want to try to bury a dog there, they'll call and ask those type of questions, and we'll give them a lot of instruction about what we kind of expect when they do decide to bury one there. So, you know, like I said, we don't have a whole lot of restrictions on, you know, you don't have to have a coffin can if you want to. That's entirely up to you. We just require, you know, we have a depth requirement that they have to meet. And like I say, the headstones can be, you know, anything from a cross with a collar on it, with a dog's name tag on it, to, you know, something pretty elaborate.
You're on your Labor Day celebration. How big of a deal, like, I mean, people-wise, how many people usually show up for that?
Well, it mostly depends on the weather, and it depends on what music we are, who, you know, what the bands that we have there, because we kind of swap it up some every year and stuff, and the bands that have the bigger followings and stuff, you know, we'll have a, but a lot of times it's between, it's close to, some years it's close to 1,000 people.
Wow. Come through there. Whoa. Are you kidding me? 1,000 people show up on that thing?
Yep.
That is unreal. I would have never dreamed 1,000 people. Would you, Jason?
We sell barbecue sandwiches, and, I mean, barbecue plates, and, you know, we have L.O. Bishop Barbecue is a kind of a local barbecue place that everybody knows around here, and they'll come and set up, and we have tables and stretched out for a real long way, and they serve barbecue, and we have vendors set up that sell, you know, anything from some hunting supplies to, you know, handmade craft stuff, and it's a really good time. I mean, it's a really good time, and you know, there's a lot of people that has been coming there like me since they were kids, and we try to keep it as old fashioned as we possibly can. You know? Try to keep it in the spirit of, you know, Key Underwood, when he buried Troop Bear, it was all about him and Troop, you know.
Yeah.
And the love of his hound, and that was their favorite place to hunt, and, you know, that it just caught on like wildfire after he bred Troop Bear. We even got quotes of him saying that, you know, he never intended to start a coon dog cemetery. He was just bred bear, and, you know, his hound that, you know, Troop lived to be 15 years old, and they hunted in them hills a lot of nights together, and y'all know what that means. You know?
Yeah, oh yeah. That's just the most neatest thing ever. I've always just been so intrigued by this cemetery. We've got to get down there and see it. We've got to come down and make a trip down there, Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. You said y'all had vendors that set up there for the Labor Day deal also?
Yes, sir.
Is there a charge for a vendor if they was interested to set up there?
Yeah, but it's not. We usually charge, my wife's actually in charge of that, so we usually charge like, you know, $10 or $15, something like that, just to set up a booth. It's not much.
Okay. You know, well, we get a little closer to time. You had to get back with me, and we'll start running some commercials on here for you and help advertise it and get the word out more. And maybe it'll work out where me and Brett can load this equipment up and bring it down there, and we can get some guys sitting around a table and telling some coon dog stories.
Yeah, you'll hear some good ones, man. There's a lot of good old coon hunters that come there. And
that'd be fun.
And that's the part I love about it most. There's coon hunters there that's 80 and 90 years old, you know, that can't do it anymore, but they have dogs buried there, and you get to hear those stories.
They love to talk about it.
Sure, if the good Lord lets me live long enough, I'll be one of those guys. So,
man, that would be awesome. I love sitting around hearing them tell stories, and if we could bring our recording equipment down there, and they would let us record a few conversations with some stories, that would be awesome.
That would be a really neat thing. I just sit there in awe about, you know, all the history and stuff that's there, and all the. You know, and like I said, that's what it's about. It's about, you know, us coon hunters and these hounds we spend all of our time with, you know, and then when you lose one, you got a special place to go, you know, recognize that. So, y'all know what that's like, and it's there's a lot of people who's drawn to it just because of that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lee, my hat's off to you and everybody else who donate their time and try to keep the tradition of it alive and going, and all the upkeep and everything that's kind of all the work that's done behind the scenes. People don't know. I mean, that's a lot to take care of and a big responsibility for everybody. And my hat's off to you. I think it's an awesome deal. It's pretty neat.
I I just got to get you down here and get you practicing buck dances and duck dancing.
He don't have to practice the lion contest. He's already got that down.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
he's
I don't hunt walker dogs. Why are you giving it? Goodness gracious. If I can't master that buck dancing, I'll come up with something. You can call it whatever you want. But.
Yeah, most of the winners we have every year are young guys. I mean, kids, you know, basically, you know, 7, 8, 9, 12 years old, somewhere in that age, you know, age group. They really enjoy getting out there and showing out. But,
oh, I bet.
Yeah.
Most of the liars are old men.
Well, did we miss anything we need to cover there about your life or about the cemetery?
No, I don't think so, man. I'm just an old coon hunter, been doing it a long time, and you know, and to me it's just about spending time in the woods with them dogs and, you know, hopefully trying to pass that on to the next generation and keeping the sport that we love alive, you know, that's what means most to me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It gets harder and harder every year, you know, but you know, people building houses everywhere and losing land to hunt, and
yeah,
it's really starting to be a challenge. But you know, I've got grandkids that hunt with me some, and it's I just hope we can keep that alive for them to be able to enjoy what we've enjoyed.
Yeah, for sure. Well, if you don't have anything else to add, I think we're to a place we can close this down. I told you I'd only try to keep you about an hour. I know you need to eat and get ready to go to bed for work tomorrow and get rested up.
I told you I got to stay up. Randy Hester's going to be here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too much worried about Lee. I was kind of thinking I'm about due for a snack, if y'all know the truth.
God.
Yeah, you don't need Brett passing out on you.
Oh, he will.
Get your sugar up. Well, guys, yeah. I've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you having me on. And like I said, if anybody has any more questions about the cemetery or want to just talk about some old coon dogs, I'm more than willing anytime, and I enjoy that. So
yeah, Lee, yeah. give us your phone number again in case somebody wants to order a shirt or hat or wants to prepay for like get a dog buried or whatever.
I'm gonna put the link to the website in the show notes
and an email address maybe too, if you want to share that.
Yes. Yeah, so if you want to get me on email, it's Lee Hatton, HATTON, the number 31 at Yahoo, do it at iCloud. You do either at yahoo.com or iCloud.com.
Okay.
Either one of me. And then my telephone number is area code 256-412-2149.
Okay.
Got it.
And it's the coondogcemetery.com. Is that right?
Well, there's a webpage, coondogcemetery.com. That's not necessarily the Facebook we have is called the Friends of the Coondog Cemetery.
Right.
Coondogcemetery.com's got a lot of information on it. And actually, if you read down at the bottom of the page, it's got mine and Frankie's name listed as contacts down there. But if you want to, if you want to contact us through Facebook, do the Friends of the Coondog Cemetery.
Yeah, I've got it pulled up here, Friends of the Coondog Cemetery, and it's got a little yellow colored sign in the background as a picture there. It says the Key Underwood Coondog Memorial Cemetery.
Yep.
Just so you find the right page. Well, Mr. Lee, if we ain't got anything else, I think we to a place we can shut it down. We really appreciate you taking time. I know you just got off work to sit down and record this with us. I was really looking forward to this one, especially being from Alabama originally and War Eagle fan. Hey, I have to hear that all the time. It's just me and my youngest son that's the Auburn fans. Everybody else in this house is Alabama fans.
Yeah, that's probably the smart one.
Well, there's no doubt about that one.
But, Leif, we guys, appreciate
I've enjoyed it.
It.
I've enjoyed it, and Brett, I'll let you after a while.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank right. you, buddy. Thank I appreciate you,
it. Yeah.
All right, good night.
All right, Mr. Lee Hatton with the Coondog Cemetery and a little bit about his life in coon hunting. I hope you enjoyed that story. Go over to Friends of the Coondog Cemetery on Facebook. Like that page, follow it. And they have a website there where you can order shirts and stuff like that. Go check them out, order a shirt, support them. And we'll catch you next time. I think there's a wrap on this one. What you think?
Yeah. Get me one of them t-shirts. They're pretty cool looking.
I'm fixing to text and put my name on this for a pocket knife.
Yeah.
I got to have one. I didn't even know about a pocket knife.
We got to get on that list.
Yeah. I'm a pocket knife guy.
If I can't get Lee to dig a grave, I also got thinking about maybe you might help. You go with me.
Yeah, I'll go with you.
Okay.
All right. Well, if you're thinking about having a dog buried there, get with Lee Hatton. He can fix you up. Otherwise, we appreciate you listening. Don't forget, leave us a review. We'll read them online, on air here. Make sure you click 5 stars, drop us a line or two. Tell us about your snacks. We may do snacks again.
You hear me in there, Judge?
I got you.
Thanks, guys, for listening to the Coontown Collective podcast today. We really appreciate you taking your time out of your day to listen to the podcast. If you don't mind, head over to Facebook and give us a like, and head over to Instagram and give us a follow. It's both at The Coontown Collective. Also, if you would like to reach us here at The Coontown Collective, you can reach us at thecoontowncollective@gmail.com. If there's someone that you would like to hear on the podcast or a product that you would like to hear talked about, please send it to thecoontowncollective@gmail.com. Thanks again. Have a great day.